My week in Cuba on a Nation magazine tour at the end of April got me thinking about the Cuban Revolution and then about other socialist revolutions of the past century. Surely there ought to be another future on the table besides those offered at the political conventions last week and the week before, a way of organizing the world around the meeting of human needs and desires rather than around the endless accumulation of capital. Even Bernie Sanders' so-called revolution asked for nothing more than the improved regulation and taxation of capital. So let's look at some revolutions that aimed at abolishing the rule of capital. My question is, why did those socialist revolutions not lead to societies governed not only for the benefit of the working class, but governed democratically by the working class? It's natural for any progressive to want the ongoing and evolving Cuban Revolution to succeed. The Cubans have fought hard and suffered much to maintain their independence from the global capitalist hegemonic system led by the behemoth off their shores. Here is how Marxist historian Sam Farber sums up Cuba's accomplishments. Contrary to conventional wisdom and expectations, the Cuban Revolution showed that it was possible to make a successful revolution against U.S. imperialism barely 90 miles from its shores. Even more unexpectedly, the revolution adopted a Soviet-style communist socio-economic system and had considerable popular support due to its anti-imperialist nationalist content, and until the early 90s, it satisfied basic material needs for the majority of the people, although it was plagued by chronic shortages of many essential consumer goods. The revolutionary government also instituted a generous welfare state, massively subsidized by the Soviet bloc. Until the collapse of the USSR and Eastern European communism at the beginning of the 1990s, the great majority of the Cuban people were able to maintain a standard of living, although certainly austere, assured the satisfaction of basic needs, particularly regarding education and health. The removal of much of the economic insecurity of Cubans and the increase of their social mobility cemented the social base for the new social system. At the same time, and remember this is coming from a Marxist, the regime thoroughly repressed every expression of organizational autonomy and opposition, whether from the working class and oppressed groups or from anybody else. End a quote from Sam Farber. The Cuban Revolution, like the Russian and Chinese before it, adopted a top-down command-and-control economy, what Hal Draper, also a Marxist, calls socialism from above, which is not Marxist socialism. Marx consistently argued for socialism from below, a democratic society that can be realized only through the self-emancipation of activated masses in a struggle to take charge of their own destiny as actors, not merely subjects on the stage of history. The emancipation of the working classes, said Marx, must be conquered by the working classes themselves. Now, all Marx's work was aimed at empowering the working class with the intellectual tools to carry out that self-emancipation and self-rule. Marx never intended his work to be a blueprint to be imposed on the people from above by a vanguard party. That's why he has a lot to say about how capitalism works, but very little to say about how socialism might work. He wanted to leave it to the people living the revolution to shape the new society as they saw fit in the unforeseeable circumstances in which revolutions arise. Now, perhaps the working people in the Cuba of 1959 were not politically, intellectually, and culturally prepared to emancipate themselves, and revolutionary leaders understandably didn't want to wait who knows how many generations for the uncertain self-emancipation of the workers when it seemed that throwing off the yoke of capital was an immediate possibility. But the new revolutionary government did not take pains to politically educate the working class and to integrate them into a process of self-government. have no doubt that is partly due to the reluctance of any ruling group to relinquish power. But this failing is not unique to socialist vanguard parties, but is shared by all groups that wield power over others. Another factor is that any group that comes to power by military action, as happened in China as well as Cuba, will have been organized as an army with a clear chain of command, and so is organized and habituated to governing hierarchically. But any revolutionary government, no matter how it comes to power, will be faced with heavy opposition from the internal and external forces it has displaced. And this makes democracy problematic. Che Guevara was in Guatemala in 1954 when the moderately socialist government of Jacobo Arbenz was overthrown, and Che attributed that defeat to Arbenz's reluctance to take sufficiently repressive steps to protect his government. 2 decades later, we have the example of Chile, where the socialist government of Salvador Allende was overthrown with help from the CIA, but primarily by reactionary forces within Chilean society. In both Guatemala and Chile, the revolutionary governments came to power through the ballot box and were committed to allowing opposition parties to continue to function, parties which then took advantage of U.S. willingness to help local capitalists and other forces of reaction overthrow the socialist experiments on behalf of international capital. Something similar may be now underway in Venezuela. Recent electoral defeats of the left in Brazil and Argentina also testify to the difficulties of sustaining a long-term revolutionary process where the opposition retains a lot of power, as is inevitable where political space is left open to them. So there are many reasons why socialist revolutions that overthrow or seriously challenge capitalism have led to socialism from above, or state-run socialism, commanded from above and brooking little or no opposition. Rather than writing off these authoritarian forms of socialism as a result of bad judgment or lust for power on the part of revolutionary leaders, it would be wiser, in my opinion, to see them as historical events that we can now, in hindsight, understand and from which we can learn certain lessons. One of these lessons would be that a fully socialist society, one that is both economically and politically democratic, cannot be invented and implemented by a political leader, party, or other elite minority group. Revolution must be understood as a process carried out by the people organizing themselves. The question for the left, then, is not how do we and our allies take power, but how can we facilitate the self-emancipation of the people? I'm Clayton Morgridge for the Old Mole Variety Hour. Arriba los pobres del mundo, de pie los esclavos sin pan, y vivemos todos.